Live and in color from the NBC News Radio Broadcasting Studios of KCAA, 1050 AM, 102.3 FM, and 106.5 FM, located in beautiful Southern California, and in parallel from the Turf Sup Radio Studio in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Thanks for tuning in to the Water Zone Show this evening.
And a pleasant good day to everybody around the world. Welcome to the Water Zone. I'm Rob Starr, along with this person named Chris Davies, who is as handy with a T-square as he is with a triangle that I found out yesterday. So, Chris, welcome. How you doing?
Hey. Thank you, Rob. Appreciate it. I don't know how much credit that gives me, but back in the day when I started, you know, doing designs and stuff, it was a drafting table with a T-square and a triangle. But you know, today it's totally different.
I know, but that made me laugh. That made me laugh on the show, so that was good the other day. So welcome. Everybody's having a great day today. How's the weather out in Sunny Cal? Is it sunny or rainy?
It's not Sunny Cal, right? We're still in that winter rain on, rain off, but we've got three storms lined up to come onto the West Coast, Rob, as you probably know. I know you follow the weather. Three atmospheric river storms, however. Three colder storms. So we should, you know, we're not going to get that 6 to 8 to 10 inch deluges in the next three storms, but you know, it's an inch and a half, 2 inch kind of thing.
Well, the water's good for everybody. I know I read an article about how California counties live in a flood path, and they got to fix that up to get the water stored somewhere instead of down the drain. So, but the person who knows a lot more about it than I do is Ms. Chris Austin, who is the purveyor of the wonderful Maven's Notebook. And I hope our listeners go to that. It's a great place to get information about water in California. So, Ms. Austin, how are you today?
Hey, I'm doing great. And, you know, just to tag on to what you were saying about the flood risk, yeah, there's actually most of California has a flood risk, including Los Angeles and Southern California. And you wouldn't think about it. You don't think of it there because it just seems to be handled. But yeah, there's a flood risk everywhere. So it's a good idea to sort of take note of what's around you and what you can do in the case of an emergency, you know.
The article was talking about that California is still failing in capturing all this runoff and stuff. But I did hear I read it in your blog this morning about that some big storms are being predicted in California mountains. Some blizzards could come, and that's what's being forecast.
Yeah, the storm that's coming in right now, I mean, I guess down in Southern California, sounds like Chris Davey was saying they're not expecting that much, but they are saying up here, the storm coming into the Sierra right now is the biggest one so far this year and could potentially drop 10 to 12 feet of snow. So they're quite working up here a lot and, you know, advising people not to try to travel to Lake Tahoe this weekend. You know, all the skiers that want to head up there, they're saying this is not a good weekend to go. And this morning, we had a lot of wind this morning as the stuff blew in, and this afternoon, the winds have died down, but we're getting some rain here, but this is a pretty extensive storm. And, you know, all these storms that we've had come through have really sort of made this water year into a pretty reasonable water year. We're kind of up around average, a little bit above average now, and the storms keep coming. So we'll see. I don't think we're going to have a record-breaking year, but I think we will get to average, stay in the average mode. So, it's shaping up to be not quite a terrible year for California water-wise.
No, just got to find a way to capture a lot of it.
Well, yeah, and that's always a challenge, and especially it's a challenge in Southern California where, you know, like land is at a premium. And, you know, you just can't point to any place on the landscape and say, going to put a recharge basin in there. You got to have the right geology. The ground needs to connect to that aquifer and not in you know, not all ground does. Just because it overlies an aquifer doesn't mean that it infiltrates into that aquifer. You know, it really depends. So they do quite a lot of stormwater capture in Los Angeles, especially considering it's kind of like retrofitting in Los Angeles. You know, it didn't grow. It didn't necessarily grow and develop with a lot of stormwater recharge in mind. But, and if you listen, if you read some articles, like Wired Magazine was calling Los Angeles, you know, was being a good spongy city. I mean, it was soaking these up. And then you read another article that talks about all the water flowing out to sea and what a terrible job we're doing. We're never going to be able to catch all that water that comes down. It's just too much of it. And can we do better? Sure. And we're certainly trying to do better. And I think that we're getting to that point. We're getting better. Now, there was a report released today from the Pacific Institute on urban stormwater. And so, you know, they're talking about what is the potential. And they really see a lot of potential of stormwater capture in the Southern California, of course, because there's so much, you know, there's a lot of cement and hardscape there. So there's a lot of stormwater, you know, potential there. And they sort of looked at these different cities all over. So, you know, there is a potential to capture stormwater. The other, one of the limiting factors, I think, though, is that it's expensive. Yeah. And, you know, so it's, you know, Southern California has Measure W, which the taxpayers passed a few years ago, which provides money for stormwater management. So they have funding to do these things. But some of these other municipalities may not have the funds to do a lot of stormwater capture. They're very nice projects, you know, rain gardens and bioswales and these things. They're popular projects, but they cost a lot per acre foot of water that sinks into the ground in that area, you know.
Yeah. Mr. Davey, I know you probably have some questions about the fishing industry and what's going on.
Well, I was going to ask about that, but I'm going to ask you one. I'm going to ask Chris one other thing, because I get an alert on my phone whenever there's a DWR, Department of Water Resources, press release, and I got one today for the Phillips survey, and I started kind of tune in to see if I can listen to some of the media briefing that happened today, Chris. But improving conditions indeed, but from what you just said, with, you know, an estimated 8, 10, perhaps even 12 feet of snow coming in, that's going to help a bit, won't it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think, you know, we're really going to have a pretty okay water year. You know, again, it's not how much is on the ground now. It's how much is on the ground April 1st. But there certainly is accumulating a lot of nice snowpack up there. Good for the skiers and good for our water supply.
Today is certainly going to help that a great deal. I'm absolutely sure, right? So.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So what's happening on the? Yeah, what's that? So I'm gonna try and answer Rob's inquiry here on the fishing industry. There's a couple of articles on Maven's Notebook. Great articles, by the way. Which one tops your list, Chris?
I don't know. I mean. We have, you know, they
sounds
had a...
Pretty, sounds pretty fishy to me.
Well, what articles would you be talking about? Well, the Sacramento Fall Run Chinook salmon population is pretty low. And salmon, I don't know. I guess we're going to find out more tomorrow. There's the big meeting that the fishery agencies have, and they're going to tell you what they're going to do for the salmon season. So, you know, that's the one that I think fishermen are kind of waiting to hear. we're going to hope that they're going to get to have a year, get to fish, but I don't know. We'll see. And they had a webinar yesterday, I think it was, Wednesday, yesterday, on Newsom's salmon plan, saving salmon, which has the support of some fishery stakeholder groups and not others. What caught your eye?
Everybody wants to be included in in that, right? So, actually, what caught my eye, Chris? I gotta be honest. I usually do gravitate to the wildlife, fish sort of stuff, and there were a couple of articles. The one I was kind of referring to was the habitat restoration in the Central Valley, especially when we talked about flooding rice fields and how much feed that produced, and that was interesting. That was an interesting one, but I'd really like to ask you about, the Colorado River Basin, because we talk a lot about California water and what's going on there. And we've just discussed, and our listeners just heard us talking about how much snow is coming, and we're probably going to have a second in a row year, a good year, water year. What about the Colorado River Basin, right? The drought is still enduring there.
Oh, well, yeah, the drought has been going on for, 20 years, and it's pretty extensive, and it's not going anywhere soon. I don't think realistically the Colorado River is ever going to be like it used to be. Part of it, too, is, the thing that they don't talk about is groundwater. They've been pumping groundwater in the Colorado Basin as long as anywhere else, and when you pump out that groundwater, that's water that was going to be in the river that you took out that doesn't go to the river. So there's a lot of the groundwater flows that supported the Colorado River are not they're just not there anymore. It's kind of the hard part. Groundwater management is a problem all over the world, and it's hard to manage groundwater because you can't see it, so that makes it difficult. But it's really difficult when that groundwater basin underlies different political entities. Like, we can manage... Yeah. Our groundwater basins here in California, because they're all in California, but now you're talking like the Ogallala Aquifer, which is under about 7 or 8 Midwestern states. I mean, they're just draining that aquifer down. And when there's multiple states involved, it's much harder to control. And that's kind of what we have going on in the Colorado River. There's just so many states, and there's groundwater pumping, and each state regulates groundwater pumping differently, that, that's going to continue to plague the Colorado River. They're trying to come up with these guidelines for, how they're going to operate the reservoirs, post-2026 when the current guidelines run out. And I heard that those talks have broken down now. They're not really going anywhere. And at some point, reclamation is going to have to make some decisions on how they're going to run the river if the states can't come to an agreement. So we'll see. There's a deadline, I think, is in March to get these guidelines done. They would like to get the guidelines and everything into place before the election, because it's not because they're worried about Trump versus Biden getting in. More so, they're worried about the changeover in leadership if there's a change in the administration. If we flip from Biden, say, back to Trump, then the management and everybody changes out, and then it takes a while to get the new people up to speed with what's going on. And they see that would be very detrimental to getting things done. So they're trying to get done you know, so they can get everything set before before November. And I don't know, we'll see, because they have to come up with the plan, and then they have to produce environmental documents, you know, the NEPA, National EPA.
Yeah,
and then, and so it just takes time to get to go through all those steps to get it done before the election. Again, not because of Trump, they're worried about Trump, but just there's a change in management in the Bureau of Reclamation would set things back as people have to get up to speed.
Yeah. So what's, you know, Newsom was talking about he wants to build a $16 billion water tunnel.
Oh, well, yeah, that's the one we've been arguing about decades. Yeah.
How do you think it's going to fall out when it comes down to this final decision?
I really don't know. They would like to build that tunnel. I think that the tunnel is really kind of needed for Southern California. Southern California has about 50% of its water is in local groundwater, stormwater capture, et cetera. Another 50% is imported water. And I think as the Colorado River shrinks and California is going to have to take less Colorado River water, I don't think they're going to be able to give up Delta water. The hard thing is that this is a tunnel that is replacing, it's like replacing a system that isn't working anymore. It's not going to necessarily generate any more water. It's going to, though, make the water that you get a little more reliable, I guess, because you're not going to be, you know, going through faulty levees that could crash or whatever. But it doesn't generate more water. And this means that it's not going to pencil out well in a cost-benefit analysis because it's replacing something. So it's gonna get hammered on that. At this point, I'm not sure which way it's going to go. I wouldn't be popping the tops off the champagne in the, you know, executive suite at DWR right now, and I'm sure that they are not, but I also wouldn't be, toasting our success at stopping the tunnels yet either, because we just don't know. There's a lot of stuff going on, you know.
Well, with the budget that the deficit budget that California has, they won't be popping any champagne for a long time. So.
Yeah, and we should note that the state of California would not be the ones paying for the tunnel, so there's no money in the budget for the tunnel. There never was, there never will be. So there was a bit of a conflation there. Some people were talking about the budget and funds for the Delta Conveyance Project, and no, that would be paid for by the agencies that are going to get the water, not the state of California. So the budget doesn't count in this.
Well, you know, it's just like any business. The first three things they tell you, we don't have the manpower, we don't have the money, and we don't have the time. And that applies across the whole big board. Well, anyway, we're going to come up to our commercial break. Chris, we do appreciate you coming on every single week. I was going to ask you some questions about your new addition to your website, but we'll get that. We'll spend a bunch of time with that next week with Justin Scott Coe and how he's doing with book reports on water. So that should be interesting. Anyway, Chris, thank you very much. For our listeners, please go to mavensnotebook.com. Hear it directly from Chris, and you can still get it from us, but you can get all the details from her more in depth than we can ever have time for it on the show. And she does this every single day. I don't know how she does it. I keep saying it, but she's amazing. And if you want to become a sponsor or you want to become a subscriber, just again, go to www.mavensnotebook.com. You won't be sorry you signed up to get these free things. They're great. Chris, thank you very much for joining us, and we will talk to you and see you on video next week.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Have a great week, Chris.
Good. All right, we're going to take a little break for our commercials, and we'll be right back with our featured guests. And stick around, it's going to be an interesting conversation. So we'll be right back.
NBC News on KCAA Loma Linda is sponsored by Teamsters Local 1932, protecting the future of working families. Teamsters1932.org.
Pros like you come to Site One Landscape Supply to stock up on supplies like this. Maybe a little of that, too. While you're here, you can grab a few tons of this. And maybe a few hundred of these. Throw in some of these guys, a case of those, and some of that new stuff you just heard about. And you can get everything you need in one place. If you have questions about when to apply this or how to install that, we keep every location well stocked with green industry pros who have the answers you need. One-stop shopping. It's just one of the reasons landscape pros stock up at Site One.
KCAA.
So, all right, everybody, thank you for being with us. We're back in the second half of the talk show. We're going to get right into our interview this afternoon. It is for Salt Lake City Public Utilities. So, if we've got Eric right there on the trigger, buddy, why don't you roll that interview? Thank you.
All right, everybody. Well, welcome back to the second half of the Water Zone Radio Show. I'm your host, Chris Davey, along with the all-knowing and ever-present Rob Starr. We have a particularly special guest tonight. Her name is Stephanie Duer. Stephanie is the Water Conservation Manager for Salt Lake City Department of Public Utilities. So she's been with the department since 2001. She was hired to create and manage their water conservation programs. And prior to that, she's worked in the landscape industry. She was a designer and a contractor for residential and commercial waterwise landscapes, not only there in Utah, but also Northern California, Colorado, Nebraska. She's also been a high school teacher. She's been a grassroots campaign organizer. And she also teaches landscape classes through the University of Utah. And Stephanie holds a BA in political science and a graduate credential in secondary education from San Jose State. She also has a master's of professional communication from Westminster College and has a special notoriety here. Stephanie was recently awarded with the Utah Green Industry Service Award. So what a guest we have tonight. Stephanie Duer, welcome to the Water Zone.
Hi, Chris. Hi, Rob. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really happy to be here.
We're glad you're here as well. And while Rob figures out his microphone there, I'm going to ask you. So, you know, kind of give us the history of Stephanie Duer. How did you get into this industry? What superfluous circumstances got you to where you are today, Stephanie?
Well, I sort of segued from teaching high school to working in the nursery industry because I started doing that during the summer months and I found it considerably less stressful. I love teaching in the classroom. I always got in trouble though with administration and school boards. So the landscape industry was a great fit for me, and I had learned so much from my parents and my grandmother about plants. And because of my background in political organizing, the environment's always been really important to me. My parents taught me early on, you know, I remember back before we talked about sustainability, we talked about recycle, reduce, and reuse. And so all of that was very important. Flash forward a lot of years, I was working in the nursery industry and doing design and running crews. And it's at some point in time you think, well, you know, this is a hard gig, and you know, what's my next step, and do I want to stay behind a shovel and, you know, at a drafting table? And I started looking at opportunities, and my mom talked me into going back to school, which is when I started working on my master's in communication. And Salt Lake City created this job, and I hadn't heard of it, but a friend of mine who applied for it actually called me and said, "You've got to apply for this job." And he ended up being my reference, and he was a city employee. And I came in, interviewed, and they hired me. They called me that day. So and I've been here ever since. I grew up in Northern California. I remember growing up in a drought. My grandparents were farmers. My mother had, we were the only house on our street where I grew up that did not have lawn in the front yard. It was a very Mediterranean style landscape. My mom was a practitioner of Thomas Church, and it was a very sustainable landscape before anyone was using those terms, or before many were. And so that was sort of the influence. So this job is, this position is sort of a natural evolution of all these other things I've done to this point. And it's, I am so lucky that I get to do this every day and work with my community and help them and learn from them as well about the value and the criticalness of water for our communities, not just for the environmental health and the human health, our economic health, all of it. We have to look at water more holistically than we do. It's not just something in a pipe.
Well, I was just going to say, you're right along the guidelines of that that Rob and I follow as well. We also have something in common, Stephanie. I started out on the, quote, business end of a shovel as well.
Yeah.
you know, back in the day, digging trenches, putting in irrigation lines and plants. Back then, the native plant scene wasn't as great. We were putting in, you know, crazy water soaking Mediterranean water needy plants back then. So a lot has changed. So Rob, go ahead, buddy.
Oh, well, you know, I know that Utah residents know and understand that lake levels are an indicator of regional water health. And, you know, surface water is especially vulnerable to drought and elevated surface temperatures, but the long-term impact of a changing climate ultimately impacts all other sources. And I know you're personally involved with some of the water efficiency goals that your city is, or an agency is doing. Can you maybe elaborate on some of the programs that you got going, like the you had a 2020 water conservation plan and identified mm-hmm. and such. How has that all evolved up to date now?
Well, so Salt Lake City, like other municipalities, well, one is Salt Lake City, we're a retail water provider, so we're not a wholesaler, and we have over 90,000 connections. State requirements here in Utah require that providers with more than 3,000 connections, I think it is, have to prepare a water conservation plan every 5 years. So I've been doing that since, I think my first one was 2003. I think one of the things that's happened is one is our data collection has become much more sophisticated, especially with the introduction of advanced metering infrastructure, so the AMI meters. We're just much better about how we collect data and sorting it and analyzing it. And that's helped us a lot so that our conservation plan is getting more and more specific. I have a tool that we work to build with a consultant that if my boss is during a water shortage or a drought, say, hey, we need to use 10 million gallons of water less a day, I can plug numbers into this calculator, and I know how every one of our water use sectors, how much they have to reduce in a day to help us meet that goal. Because not everyone uses water the same way, too, and I think this is an important issue here. You know, Salt Lake, Utah has been working on conservation for a while now, but our fixation seems to be on lawns and landscapes. And though that's a big part of how we use water, not everyone uses water the same way. And just because someone uses water doesn't mean they're using it inappropriately. So dialing down and understanding how, you know, beauty salons and tattoo parlors and breweries and oil refineries and hospitals and all of that use water is critical for us to be able to meet our goals. And we've done pretty well so far. We've reduced water usage about 30% over the last 20 years. Peak demand has reduced about 33%, and that's is something I'm very proud of our community, because that reflects a consistent reduction in water use over the summer months. But critically, you know, reducing our peak demand means that we have built space in our infrastructure. We've built in capacity. So conservation, though, you know, you hear that, if we use less water, you're going to charge us more. And I always tell people, well, conservation costs us pennies. Not conserving will cost us tens of thousands of dollars. So So our conservation efforts have allowed our engineers to plan for infrastructure that can meet our growing needs as a community without having to upsize everything. So and that was sort of not directly answering the question, but we have programs that are focused on landscape. So we partner with Utah State University to conduct water checks, which are evaluations of irrigation systems with really specific information about how a homeowner can improve that in terms of improving efficiency and distribution uniformity and irrigation scheduling. We have the Water Maps program with USU, which is an innovative program that links aerial imagery that helps us assess an estimate of water need on a landscape, literally parcel by parcel. And then we can compare that data with metered data for that same parcel. So I can look at an address and know how much that household is under or overwatering as an estimate. And we can use that to help us sort of direct programs towards our properties that are using the most water and using the most water inefficiently.
I was going to say, does a customer with your automatic meter readers, do they have a way of getting instant feedback? Is there a internet or something that they can tell right away what they're using? Okay.
Absolutely, Rob. So we are transitioning to the AMI meters now. We have 90,000 connections, and I think we're a little more than halfway there. It's a long process for us. But we have some, if customers can go into our customer service portal and to their bill payment page, they can see their AMI data. They can set their own alerts. So that they can, you know, have alerts that give them thresholds of when they're using more water than they want to. They can also, from their customer portal, they can access their water map report. Now, right now, water map is a sort of a historical look. We aren't live yet on it because, there's just a lot of cost and personnel time involved. But right now, they can look at where they've been the last 5 years on a monthly basis, with the relationship between their landscape water need, climate at that time, and water delivered. And so they can see exactly when they over or underwater. So we try to provide as much information as possible in as many different ways as possible to our customers. Besides working with households, we also have programs we do water checks and water maps on commercial properties. We've also just completed a citywide audit where we looked at over 750 meters on city properties and conducted some water checks, looked at water maps for those properties, identified initially over 238,000 square feet of lawn that we can convert either to a low water lawn or some other landscape. So we're trying to look at how we can help customers across all of our sectors reduce water out of doors. And then we have all our programs for indoors. So we do commercial audits indoors. I'm doing an analysis and data collection on cooling towers in our service area. Central Utah Water Conservancy District offers landscape rebates for commercial and residential customers, and they also have a toilet rebate program that is available for commercial customers as well. So there's a lot of things that we're trying to do to help all of our customers, help us achieve long-term and sustainable goals. And so far, there's more to do, but we're on a good pace.
One quick question: what is the status of water there in your territory?
Your timing is great because Candace Hasenjäger, who's the director of the Utah Division of Water Resources, and our own department director Laura Briefer with the public utilities here are looking at those numbers right now. And typically, it's still a little bit early to give a full assessment of what our water picture looks like this coming year. Where we stand today, we're slightly above average for snowpack, certainly not to the extent we were last year. And our reservoir capacity is pretty good. We have good storage right now. The problem is it's still early, mid-February, and this week we're supposed to be in the 50s. So while in this moment we are okay, you know, it depends on what the next 2 or 3 months bring, because typically we'd be still getting snowfall into March and even April. And so if this weather pattern we're getting right now, which is every week to 10 days, we're getting some snow in the mountains, that helps. But if we have high winds or higher temperatures in the meantime, that snow is melting off sooner than we anticipate. So it's still a little early to tell, but it's not bad.
Well, Chris?
I see, Stephanie. No, Stephanie, so I gotta ask this because from your background, right, started that job in 2001. So you've been in there a couple of decades. So kudos to you for that. Yeah, as my brother, who's a fisherman, says that, you know, time flies when you're having fun. Unless you're a trout fisherman, then time's fun when you're having flies.
Well, actually, I was going to say that, but it's Kermit the Frog said that.
Yes, that's absolutely correct. So there's a little history for you, Rob. So, you know, conservation efforts, right? I mean, you've been at this for a long time, for a good long while. Yeah, cookies. And of course, the end goal is just, you know, making sure or ensuring that continued supply of water for your customers. So some of the things that you talked about are great, and I want to get a little bit more into those. But can you tell us our listeners are going to want to know kind of what's the ratio of your water availability? Is it mostly surface water, mostly groundwater? Can you kind of give our listeners kind of that view?
About 60, if I recall the numbers, and most of our water is surface water that comes from snowmelt. So our largest reservoir is our Wasatch Mountains and the snow that is contained in them or sits on them in the winter months. And that's a critical part of our water supply scenario. The rest of our water comes from groundwater. And we do have some water that comes in through the Upper Colorado River Basin system through the Jordanelle and Strawberry system. But the bulk of our water, and I'm trying to think of a percentage, I think it's probably close to 80% or 85% is surface water from snowmelt.
Yeah, and I would suspect as much, but, you know, just thinking about your geographic location there and your juxtaposition next to the Great Salt Lake right there, you know, and an impoundment, by the way, that's kind of really two lakes, but that has no water outflows, right? So the only water it gets is from water inflows. And I'm sure that there are tons of water rights issues and all that kind of stuff. And we certainly don't have time on this conversation to go into all that stuff, but it is interesting. So getting back to some of your programs and stuff, you've got one called Flip Your Strip. What's that about?
Well, Flip Your Strip is a program that's offered, well, it was offered through the Central Utah Water Conservancy District, which is a wholesaler, which is how Utah gets the water from the Upper Colorado River Basin Unit or the Bonneville Unit. And that's a program that helps homeowners and commercial properties convert park strips, which are that space between the sidewalk and the roadway, from lawn to non-lawn plants. And so it's a pretty successful program, and it helps. It's just like the conversion programs in California. It pays property owners to remove lawn. The one thing I have about, and we love that Central Utah offers this program to our customers. They also have one called Localscapes, which is the front yard. Although, again, the names are changing, and they're changing them to, I think it's just landscape transformation program or something. I'm not sure what the new name is, but it's the same thing. But it's also important that our customers know that lawn isn't the enemy here. It's the lawn we choose and how we choose to water it. And so reducing the lawn footprint is a great idea, but also think about the kind of lawn you have and choose a lawn that makes more sense for our area. There's lots of great Utah State University does wonderful research around this area. One of our other programs is actually one called the SLC Turf Trade Program, where we offer up grass seed at a below market rate to encourage homeowners to replace their water-hungry old Kentucky bluegrass lawns with a smarter, tall fescue Kentucky mix so that they can use 30 to 40% less water. So yeah, flip your strip of the Central Utah. I think they're calling them landscape transformation programs now. Is a great program that is available to all of our customers in our service area. And we, by the way, provide water not just to folks in Salt Lake City, but also to Mill Creek, Holiday, and Cottonwood. So all of our customers are eligible for those programs.
Awesome, Stephanie. How do you get that information out to your customers? What's your like your education and your outreach program? And mailers, you know, I know you must have a social media presence. Well, I know you do actually have a social media presence as well. You know, kind of give us a little bit about that. Are you visible on like Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or X, and now YouTube, that kind of stuff?
Absolutely. The utility has a communications team that handles all of that for all of the utility issues. So we do YouTube, all of the things you mentioned. We don't do mailers as much anymore. Studies indicate that they're not read often, you know, so I'm not sure it's a good use of public resources anymore.
Right.
But we try to use social media as much as possible. We also have a pretty engaged community council system here. So we're in our city council, each of our council districts is divided into smaller community council districts. And we frequently during the year, the utility does the rounds, if you will, and visits the community councils and shares information. And also the mayor's office and the city council office liaisons sometimes help us with that messaging as well. So we try to reach use as many different mechanisms as possible. We also periodically put out press notices. We did a press release last year, a press conference when we launched water maps, for instance. And then our Salt Lake City turf trade program, we didn't do any we did a little advertising, but we got picked up by local news media and the story just blew up and literally we sold out of grass within, it was less than 30 hours. It was pretty intense. Sure. So yeah, what I'm really excited about is opportunities to reach out to customers that are less engaged or ones that have, you know, I think about my customers that have language barriers in terms of the information we put out. The city is working actively to reach out to all of our customers, our residents, regardless of what language they speak. And that's an exciting opportunity for us to make sure that we get information and useful information to everybody, regardless of what language is that they're most comfortable with or where they're from.
Are smart controllers prevalent in Utah?
I think they're more prevalent now than they were when I started. The issue we have is, you know, everything, I'm a data girl. Like if I, you know, someone says, why don't you do this program? It's usually because I've done homework on it and something doesn't make sense to me or the numbers don't crunch out. The issue with smart controllers is not all of them are smart as people think they are. And it depends on the kind of data that gets inputted into them in terms of the effectiveness. Again, leaning back on USU, Kelly Cope there has done studies on smart controllers. And most smart controllers help people reduce water use compared to standard controller, which were the old calendar ones. But for instance, I found a series of smart controllers here that were using data from the California Institute of Technology. Well, I'm not sure how good that weather data is for us. And, you know, why aren't we using weather data closer at hand? To help with that, I partnered again with Utah State University and we installed 5 new weather stations in our service area that are university research grade weather stations so that folks with smart controllers and especially the Bluetooth type controlled and cloud-based controllers can access weather data much closer to home now and get much better live time data on so that it can help them improve their programming.
Oh yeah, there's so many different microclimates in every area that it affects.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I even see golf courses have 2 or 3 weather stations because it's a long, you know, long course or multiple courses and they need that. Does your organization do a lot of hands-on training of people, your consumers on what are smart yards and what are smart controllers and what are rain sensors and all of those kind of things and to get better educated in really about water. It's just saying, you know, instead of just saying, hey, you got to conserve, blah, blah, blah. Do you put on some workshops with those kind of things?
We do workshops. I also rely, the nice thing about living along the Wasatch Front is 80% of the Utah population basically is along the Wasatch Front. And there's a lot of water districts and wholesalers. So we sometimes I can pony, you know, piggyback on their messages. I'm an office of one, so it's sometimes hard to do everything by myself. But for instance, the Water Check program is a face-to-face training opportunity, and working with Utah State University provides bodies on the ground that help with that. We're looking at teaching some workshops to help people in the landscape transformation programs to help them be more successful and to get through that program more readily. And those will be workshops we'll be offering soon, I hope this spring. And we have a lot of stuff on, we do a lot of video because that, again, our service area is sort of spread out. So having stuff on YouTube and on our website helps. So for instance, for our Salt Lake City Turf Trade Program, I partnered with Utah State University to make some how-to videos. So we have 6 very short how-to videos of how to install seed properly to replace your lawn with a lower water grass seed. And those have had a lot of visitors and have been very useful. We also have a website, it's called SLC GardenWise, which was built in with a consultant actually out in Santa Barbara area. And that is a sort of a virtual garden tour of WaterWise landscapes in our service area. And there's a lot of information on that as well. And we get during the summer months as many as 10,000 hits a month on that site. So we try to use as many different platforms as possible to get information to folk and use, especially after the pandemic, I think people got more comfortable or at least more familiar with doing things online. So we try to take advantage of that sort of collective learning that we all went through and so that we can get more information out on the web for people. But yeah, we still have folks who like workshops. And we do community fairs and such, and we do tabling and hand out information. So we try to be as present as possible.
I like the comments you made about you're a data gal, a data person. You know, when I go out and do training, I always tell them 2 things, and similar to what you do. In God we trust, all others bring data, because I believe data better than anything else.
I like that.
And then when you're trying to convince a consumer that they need to be smarter, I always say, you know, you can't walk on water if you don't get out of the boat, because they don't want to change. People are so affected, you know, remembrance of what they know and what they're used to, and something new kind of terrifies them for a little bit. So I appreciate all the work that you're doing in that, and you got all the right programs going. Chris, any final words?
I do. Stephanie, I'm going to ask you if you can take a little, you know, forward-looking view, if you will, right? I mean, back in 2001 when you started, I don't know what the population of Salt Lake City was, but here we are 2 decades later, and it's got to be growing. What exciting things are coming down the pike?
Wow. There's quite a number of them. One is I am really excited about the opportunity to conduct the audit on city properties. I was able to work with a consulting firm, Madouse Water Management, Inc. You guys might know Michelle Madouse, on that project. And we did an assessment and analysis of water use on city properties because we want to set a good example. And now I'm tasked with creating the 5-year plan for implementing the recommendations in that study. And I'm really excited about that. There's a lot of opportunity, both indoors and outdoors, for the city to show homeowners and commercial customers that there are ways to be efficient and appealing and support our, you know, water conservation isn't just about keeping water in the reservoirs. You guys brought up the Great Salt Lake. Water conservation is also about making sure we have water in our environment. A number of years ago, I was part of the governor's state water strategic planning process. And one of the environmentalists, representative of an environmental group that was at the table, used the phrase, you know, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. And that's really stuck with me. And it's important that we keep the environment in our list of constituents, if you will, as we think about this. So what the city is doing in terms of their conservation efforts is something I'm excited to start. The other thing that we're doing, you know, again, the expansion of water maps is a great opportunity. And we just completed the initial analysis last year. And so this year, the intent would be to roll out that data and reach out more directly to customers in each of the different categories of the assessment, and let them, you know, share with them directly that, hey, we, you know, we've done this analysis of your property. This is what we think is going on there. These are specific things you can do. These are resources you can access. How can we help? And so now, rather than doing sort of a generalized conservation messaging, we can be very targeted. Because as I said, it's not just how much water you use, it's how you use the water. And I know where the households are that are using, not only using a lot, but using it inefficiently, potentially. And, you know, because it's a aerial imagery, it's an estimate, but it's still a good place to start. So I'm very excited about that. I'm excited about, the, you know, we're working on launching a commercial program about, you know, getting indoors, because as our population grows, keeping that indoor water usage down, that's our base water use. So, you know, I need to be mindful about that number going up. In fact, one of the things that is going to be a challenge and that we're working on, and it's a dialogue that comes up a lot in the Alliance for Water Efficiency meetings I attend, is how do we get messages to people in multi-dwelling, you know, multi-unit dwellings, so apartment complexes and condos, because they don't get a bill. They don't see their meter. That building might have only one master meter. So looking at how to address water use indoors is going to become much more important, I think, out here as Utah experiences densification. And that's going to be a pretty, that's going to be important.
Well, we'd like to thank you, Stephanie, for coming on the show today. We have to turn it over to NBC for the news hour. And we do appreciate, how can anybody find out about Salt Lake City Public Utilities? You just go on a website and they can download some of the information about what you guys have done?
Absolutely. They can visit slc.gov/utilities/conservation. And we've got all our programs there and links to great resources. My contact information is there. And, you know, it's great that you guys are out in California. I attend meetings with CalWEP and have a lot of great, you know, there's a lot of great work going on in California, and partnering with those folks is, you know, I've learned a lot and they've been really sharing, which is great. So thank you for inviting me into, you know, into your guys' neighborhood.
Well, we appreciate that. We just had Tia Fleming, if you know her from CalWEP. She was on a couple of weeks ago, and that was great. But again, for me and from Chris, thank you very much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much, guys. I do too. And let's do it again sometime.
Okay.
Well, it was pretty interesting, Chris. She's a good interviewer.
It was a great, that was a great segment. I mean, you know, just the depth of knowledge that Stephanie shared with us is great. And the, you know, just looking, the forward-looking view that she took there for a couple of minutes at the end there to discuss with us, we're going to have to tag on to her and get her back on the show.
Absolutely. I hope a lot of your peers are listening in and heard that interview with some of the other water agencies throughout the country. That's pretty interesting insight. She sure gets involved with stuff. So anyway, that was great. And for our audience, we were going to be back next week, and we have some good special guests coming up. And we're going to tell you about some really nice things that are going to happen, and some of the special, very high level people who did stuff for the government, like Undersecretary of Defense and other things that's going to come on, and the head of the FBI Cyber Lab and things of that sort. So anyway, all of you have a great week. Hopefully the weather's going to be nice. If you need the rain, hope it rains. If it doesn't, then enjoy the sunshine. And one thing that Chris and I always want to tell you before we leave is please help
paint our planet blue.
Because if you like green, you can't get there without blue. Good night, everybody. You have a great week.
NBC News on KCAA Loma Linda is sponsored by Teamsters Local 1932, protecting the future of working families. Teamsters1932.org.
NBC News Radio, I'm Brian Shook. This